Joint Ocean Commission initiative, working to protect the life of the ocean so the ocean can help sustain the life of our planet.
And if you are on the planet, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's 1 minute after 6 o'clock. It's time for Off the Wall. music never fails to grip me. The new opening to Off the Wall. Thank you, Donald Trump, because it's because of you that we picked this particular bit of music. It just sort of sums it all up. It's Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here, joined by Kyle.
Yeah, I am here. I am joining you.
And we're back. Well, actually, yeah, you didn't know we were away because we were here last week, but then between last week and this week, we went away. We went to Boston, and we're back.
All the way.
And, yeah, there was probably a lot of angry people in Boston that had scores to settle that realized that they missed the opportunity. Yeah, you know, you don't have to advertise your presence every time you go someplace. A lot of people seem to think they have to do that. And, no, we went to Boston. Although my phone kept trying to rat me out, kept telling me where I was and advising me to check in and offering to check in for me and things like that. But I don't think I bowed to temptation too much.
Not willingly.
Yeah. They're handy. They're good to have. You know, it's nice to be able to find places to go and things that are happening. And we did quite a few cool things as a result of checking technology and hitting buttons and
Communicating. Asking friends what they do when they're there.
That's true. We did that as well. Using aliases, of course.
Yeah.
But we were up there for a few days, and it's funny. We went up there in a weird way. We took the ferry from Port Jefferson to Bridgeport, Bridgeport, Connecticut. And then from Connecticut, what you can do is you can hop on an Amtrak and just go right to Boston. But we decided to do it a little differently. We took a local train, Metro North, from Bridgeport to New Haven, also in Connecticut. And that's as far as Metro North goes. So we had a choice. What do we do now? Well, not really a choice. It's a question. What do we do now? It turns out there's another commuter line that's not Metro North. It's called Shoreline East, and it was kind of put together to fill in gaps when I-95 was being reconstructed and all kinds of delays. They had some track that they used to use in the New Haven Railroad many, many years ago, and so they constructed this temporary commuter line that went from New Haven to New London and a couple other places, and it turned out to be so popular that they kept it. It started in 1990. And they kept it, and people were really adamant about it not being discontinued. So we took the Shoreline East, which I had never ridden before, and Kyle, I don't believe you have either.
No.
To New London from New Haven.
I've been on Metro North, but not on that.
Yeah, Metro North is a mystery in and of itself, too.
Although
there's all different branches.
We were on Metro North when we were up in Cambridge, New York.
We passed by it on
10.
We drove up there. It wouldn't make sense for us to get on the train, too.
No, but we stopped at the tracks to see them.
We did.
Is that a different line?
I think we stopped at the tracks because the train was going over the tracks. And
well, yeah.
We'd be squashed otherwise. Which, folks, by the way, yes, a public service announcement, when a train is going over a crossing, don't try and compete with it.
Suffice to say, the Shoreline East, being a temporary line, which I didn't realize, you did the research, it allowed us to get a little bit further on the different legs of the trip that added up to getting to Boston.
Yeah, I think that was an hour-long ride from New Haven to New London, and getting from Bridgeport to New Haven was about a half hour. Then there's a period between New London and Providence, Rhode Island, that has no commuter rail, and you have to get on Amtrak to do that. By the way, Shoreline East is operated by Amtrak, which is kind of interesting. It has Amtrak locomotives and Amtrak employees, but it's actually a commuter line that is not Amtrak. But we had no choice but to take Amtrak from New London to Providence. Of course, they were an hour late, so that kind of messed up our plans just a little bit. Fortunately, we had backups. We had another train we could take after that, so it could have been bad if it had been later, but it wasn't.
There's a lot of accusations floating around, too, because of that. Apparently some track broke, but the way they described it, it was always about how down south something out of their hands happened.
They said, yeah, down south a rail broke, and that's why this train is late. Meanwhile, Acela's are flying by, which actually I guess kind of backed up their story, because Acela's don't go all the way down south, so maybe something did break in Georgia or something, I don't know, and this train was chugging its way up the eastern seaboard. And finally made its way to us in New Haven and took us, it's less than an hour from New Haven to Providence. And
New London.
No, New London. New London to Providence. Yeah. That's it. And then we were in Providence, and the last leg of the trip is the MBTA, which is like New York's MTA, except it's not. It's the MBTA. Used to be known as the MTA, in fact. In fact, if you look up that old song, Charlie and the MTA, I'm talking about Boston's mass transit system, it's all about this guy who gets stuck on a train and can't get off because you have to pay a nickel to get off. That's what they, I think in 1961 they instituted this crazy fare scheme where you pay to get on and you pay to get off.
Right, it's like a down payment for ingress and then you complete the payment for egress.
Yeah. Now we weren't quite in that system yet. That's known as the T. That's the Boston Mass Transit subway system they have in the city proper. This was the MBTA, the extension, the commuter lines, and we took a train from Providence all the way to Boston, which is kind of like the LIRR. And so we took four trains to get from here to Boston, and a ferry as well. So that was it took about 9 hours. It took a long time to get up there, but you know it's not the way people normally travel, and we like to travel that way.
Yeah, no, it's different totally from what I think a lot of people are used to in that sense of being hurried and having to get places quickly. This is the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be for everybody. It might take some mental exercise to get in that mode. But once you do, you really do find that you can slow down, you can appreciate the surroundings, you can maybe learn a little bit about smaller parts of the journey instead of just basically flying over or flying past.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to, I don't know, go into a cafe, have a little bit to eat.
We went to a great vegan place in New London. We wouldn't have been able to do that if we had been on an express train that didn't stop there or didn't stay there. Kind of like a mini version of our cross-country trips by train, where you can get off and visit in Chicago for a few hours. We had time to kill, and we were able to walk around and make the most of it. And
looking at all the stations, the unions and the central stations,
mm-hmm.
It's either one or the other, but they have these big stations, usually very old buildings.
Yes.
And their architecture can span all kinds of different types and detail work, and sometimes they have murals and plaques and things that you can read about that particular station. But there's
New Haven has a great it's a Union Station, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
Yet another Union Station, and it was built a long time ago, big, huge building. I think it was closed for a while, then they reopened it, restored it. But there are lots of other stations along the way, too, that you'll admire the architecture of. But yes, once we got to Boston itself, that's where they have their own subway system, subways and trolleys and things like that. And that's where the song Charlie and the MTA was originated, because of the crazy system they had where you had to pay to get off. And the story is that, it's a fictitious story, I believe. He was stuck on the train. He didn't have a nickel to get off, and he was just doomed to ride the train forever, because he couldn't get off the train. And his wife, every day, would hand him a sandwich as he passed by a particular stop. You know, of course, the question you want to ask is, why couldn't you hand him a damn nickel?
That was the first thing I said. How much does that sandwich cost?
Yeah, and there are just so many things wrong with the story. But it was a good song, and it was a song that became very popular, and it sort of epitomized the whole Boston transit system, so much so that their fare pass is called the Charlie card. So they really kind of bought into that whole thing and romanticized
it. They adopted the story, yeah.
Sure did.
It was a cultural phenomena. It was controversial even during
mm-hmm.
its emergence. But, yeah, they've actually classified a particular fare card, and that was the card that we got, and it was really, really helpful.
Yes, it was. We got a it's interesting. The day pass costs something like $10. That allows you to ride anything for a full day.
What would they call it in Paris? It's the carnet or something, like
they
a three-day?
They all have different names for it.
Every place has these. But,
yeah
here it was called the Charlie Pass. 7 days, he said.
Well, one day was about $10, and 7 days a week was $21. So it's like it's a no-brainer. Get the 7 day one because you know it's saving a huge amount. And,
wow, that is a big savings. I didn't realize it.
We still have the cards. They're still good for another 3 days.
So
if anybody is going to Boston, come by the station. We'll give them to you. Fair price. What do you think? $30? I don't know. We got to make it back somehow.
That's not barely a lunch. Come on, we got to get a pizza party out of this, well, something for the station.
We spent a lot of time walking around that city and just learning so much. Riding, I think we rode every type of line they have. We rode the green line, the blue line, the red line, the orange line, the silver line. Wow, the silver line. It's I was angry when I found out about this. It turns out the silver line is actually a bus. But the bus is really kind of cool because it goes down these long concrete paths.
Bus tunnels.
Bus tunnels where nothing else, you know, except the errant skateboarder maybe is on these things. And no other vehicle except for that one bus can go down there.
Seattle has bus tunnels.
Like that? I mean, that went on for miles.
Similar. There's at least one or two big bus tunnels in the city of Seattle.
We found at the end of the red line that there was this thing called a metro, high-speed metro, which is not high-speed at all. It's a single trolley car that has been kept there for decades. They've been trying to phase it out and replace it with something more modern, and the people that live there will not have that, and they want to keep their little trolley. And it's a great single-car ride, goes for seven stops, not really high-speed. I don't know how they managed to call it that, but... Wow, the history. The history is just amazing.
Maybe faster than buses starting and stopping. I mean, I don't know where they what they're comparing it to. Maybe faster than high speed compared to walking.
Compared to walking, yes. Okay, I guess you could say it then.
But it's adorable, and it works really, really pretty well.
They don't like it when you call it adorable.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They don't. The Bostonites do not like that.
Cute, that's not...
Say rugged, okay. Individualistic, tough,
Yeah, purpose. What am I saying? Functional,
hardy. You know, something that is going to be around long after we're gone, and we'll be gone a lot sooner if we call it adorable or anything like that.
Okay,
so don't do that.
I'm sorry, Boston. I said that with a Boston accent. The cars itself, they only run one. It basically is a big cul-de-sac or a big loop.
Yes.
And at one end it loops around, and the other end they have like a shop where the rest of these trolley cars stay, which I assume they're scrapping for parts and, you know, trying to use every last piece of them to keep it going.
Right.
And then we saw a poster for improvements. They want to improve the braking and the powertrain on
not these. Phasing it out, just improving what they have.
Because they know they will be the other end of everyone's ire over it.
Yes.
But it was really well used. We were there, it was late at night, like, you know, after 9 o'clock.
Late at night there was about 9 o'clock, yes.
No, after dinner time, mm-hmm. shall I say. But very, very well-traveled. Lots of people, all kinds of conversations, and everybody's got their phones, and it's just a regular part of people's routine.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of makes you realize these little temporary things, these little things that crop up, become useful in a lot of communities.
It's called a Mattapan line, if you want to check this out. You have to take the red line to the end. Actually, the red line splits up into two parts. One goes to Ashford, is it? Or
I think that's the name. Yeah, Ashford or Ashmont.
Ashford or Ashmont, one of those.
Something like that.
And the other version of the red line goes to Braintree, so don't take that one. Take the Ashford one. And then what you do is you get off there and you just walk over to the Mattapan line, and that's where you get the single car trolley or bus. I don't know what else you can call it.
Streetcar.
Streetcar, yes. That's another
high speed streetcar.
It's worth a trip just to go out seven stops and come back, which is what we did. So we rode just about everything there was to
ride.
Yeah,
we were.
We even rode a regular bus because that got us from the orange line to the red line.
Yeah, we did the silver line. We did nearly every. We were on every single line except for the blue, really.
No,
we saw it.
We went on the blue.
Oh, we were on it.
Yes. You were kind of tired, but we went on the blue.
I remember being in the blue tunnel and I was like carrying things maybe.
Yes, we took it one stop.
But, okay.
The blue line is interesting because it goes to Wonderland. I don't know what Wonderland is. It goes to Wonderland, and people tell us, don't go to Wonderland. it's not a nice place. Why is it called Wonderland, then? I don't know what any of that is about.
And how is Braintree better than that?
Braintree is, you know, we almost stayed in Braintree because I couldn't find a place to stay that was affordable. But Braintree is so far away from Boston. And we eventually stayed in the hostel, which... You know, that's another thing people might not want to do. They might say, "This is, you know, I can't deal with sharing a bathroom." What we had to do.
The uninitiated.
But let me explain. Sharing a bathroom doesn't mean that you know, you're on the toilet and somebody else is like washing their hands. No, that's not how it works. It's a room, and if it's locked, then you don't come in there. And if it's unlocked, then it's open. except for the time that woman was putting on her lipstick and it was unlocked and you walk in.
Yeah, I did walk in on a young lady who was applying makeup. And
lock the door. It's all you got to do.
I come in looking like Grizzly Adams, and it wasn't a pretty sight. But it's something true. We could go on and on about this. Hostels have really gotten with it.
Yes.
Like, they have a lot of amenities now. They are really enthusiastic about travelers from different areas. In fact, this particular hostel was adamant you must be from further away than town, because they only want people that are from a far-flung place. But like you said, private rooms are available, maybe a couple of them in most hostels nowadays.
Yes.
It's not all the, like, 20-person rooms that you might have imagined.
It's indistinguishable from a hotel in many ways. If you want your bed turned down at a certain time and housekeeping to come in, you'll be disappointed. Because,
yeah, it's not that.
You know, we slept in a bunch of days, until like 2 or 3 in the afternoon sometimes, and nobody bothered us. That's what I want. You know, and a hotel wouldn't give you that. They'd be knocking on your door, even if you have the Do Not Disturb sign on.
And it is sparse. But, you know, it's all you need when you're actually visiting a place. And
we spent the days walking around, exploring, having adventures of various sorts.
Riding trains.
Yes. And we did more than ride trains. It wasn't just that. We saw a play. We saw a play about Boston called Finish Line. I really recommend it. It's only playing for another week. And I think they're going to try to take it national. It's about the Boston Marathon bombing. And it was done in a really interesting way. I'd never seen a documentary play before.
Me either.
A documentary play, basically, it takes the words of people who were involved and acts them out. Basically, the dialogue is delivered with every and pause, and done so well, just having all these people just relating their experiences and their feelings of that day, both before and after. The stage is lit by 1,000 light bulbs, incandescent light bulbs, I believe.
Yeah, it was sort of animated and glowed. It would dim and become brighter
mm-hmm.
at various points, and you had this sort of wave of emotion that would swell and reach a crescendo, and then at certain points in the story, there was an emphasis with silence.
Yeah.
And quiet and darkness.
See, when I first heard about this play, I figured it was going to be a dramatization, you know, people running on stage, you know, hey, I'm about to finish it. None of that. No, it's basically people one by one coming forth, gathering in groups, talking, sharing experiences in a very conversational way.
Very fluid.
And then when the bombing happens, silence, just darkness and silence. Exactly not what you expect. I thought something would blow up. No, it's not that at all. But the effect is even greater than if something did blow up. And the aftermath and what people went through and just hearing those words, it was moving. It really was incredible. So if you're in Boston or going to Boston in the next week, definitely check that out. It's called Finish Line. Great to see a play about a place that you're in.
Yeah, it was really touching. Had a lot of things to say about community and adversity. And it just, it was a very, very interesting minimalist
mm-hmm.
style. But it was able to capture the emotion in the story, the broader story, and then the implications for people's lives very, very well. And I loved how they interacted and worked together to go from one person's recollection to another and back again. It was really well woven.
Yeah, so people play more than one part, too, which is really pretty amazing that they can just switch characters. But very, very believable and just inspirational as well. So that's where we were for the last week or so, just kind of wandering around a different city, getting different experiences, and it was cool, just kind of commuting and being a Bostonite.
Yeah, learning the topography, learning the different neighborhoods, and just the way people are. And we were there during, of course, St. Paddy's Day, which everyone asked us about.
Yeah.
Oh, you went up, you're going to... Yeah, we went up there to wear green shamrock everything, and, your hair is still green, you know, since we dyed it, and...
You know, let me just... point this out.
What, bro?
There are a lot of bros in Boston, okay? We did it right, I think. We went to a nice, mellow Irish pub for lunch that day.
That was fantastic.
And had our, what do we have, corned beef and...
corned beef sandwiches.
Yeah, corned beef sandwiches and, you know, and a Guinness, of course. And it was just really nice. Very, you know, not bashing over the head with your Irishness or anything like that. But there were people who wanted that. And there were parts of town where people were loud and obnoxious. Occasionally we'd, you know, be brushing up near those people. Yeah, you know, I've noticed in Boston there is a preponderance of cell phone using, self-centered, loud talking, close walking people that are also a little bit taller than normal. I don't know why that is.
In vain. Oh, you already said that.
Well, self-centered, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, we've all seen people like this that just, you know, talk so loudly that you can't help but become sucked into their conversation. You're trying to have your own conversation at a different table, and they're just basically thinking everybody is interested in their existence, and we're not. You know, we're from New York. We don't care.
Well, you can hear their voice,
uh-huh.
But they're not saying anything meaningful. It's like a dramatization of everybody's first impression or things that you just deal with when you go out or you are in public space. You have to make some compromise with the public and the world. But I just heard a lot of like critiques of things that just sounded like these are tourists or out of town. Or not. I don't know. Maybe just
a mix.
Yeah, a certain point in people's lives where they know everything about everything and have no kind of self-awareness of how they might sound or be perceived.
Yeah, they don't. Well, they assume that you know, everybody cares. Everybody looks up to them.
Same perspective. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And you know, I'm not that social. You know, I'll help out when it's necessary, but I really don't want to be sucked into this, and I don't want to be doing the same. And don't get me wrong, a lot of people in Boston, most people in Boston, are perfectly fine. And
it's a very smart town.
Very smart. So many students everywhere. We went to a coffee shop every morning. It's always a coffee shop near where you're staying, and that's you know, this one was a student student-dominated area. And you know, you just hear all these conversations, not the obnoxious kind, just the enthusiastic kind, where people are studying something or sharing something or just having you know, interesting conversations, but not overly dominant ones. They're still louder than normal, though. People do tend to get very animated. I mean, every day we would sit somewhere, and people would be going through something next to us, and somehow we had to listen to all that. Like, we had the last day, we sat next to a guy thinking, okay, at least this will be quiet because he's by himself. But no, he wasn't by himself. He was on the damn phone. Talking about
he made three different phone calls.
Yeah, he and giving out all kinds of information too. I got his phone number. Almost another 10 minutes, I would have had his social security number.
So like medical tests,
billing, and everything. You know, just going through talking to all the customer service representatives he can find, then calling his friends and wrapping up the conversation they just had in case I missed anything. I could take notes that way. You know, we got to be a little bit more careful with the information we share when we're blurting it out in public spaces. But no, you know, for the most part, it was a pleasant experience.
You know what I just realized? Think about it. Like, when you would use a phone in public way back when, you'd have a booth.
Exactly.
It would be inherently private.
Exactly, yes.
You could maybe huddle around it and, you know, the barriers on each side, or even maybe some had a door, a sliding door.
What a good idea. A phone booth that you walk into with your cell phone to make a phone call. Need to make a phone call? Use the phone booth. Why not?
Or maybe you just take like a plastic like hefty bag, you know, and you just put that over your head with your phone.
Illegal. Oh, you mean for them to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, because I wanted to do that to people.
And then you just tighten the ties on it, and then you have your little booth over you.
Well, okay, you know, there's many ways of doing this.
We could design a portable booth, is what I'm saying.
But I like the idea of people going elsewhere to make their phone call, not doing it at the table, not doing it right next to you, not injecting some person who's not even there into your life. It's pretty annoying. And
no, you're right. That is at the bare minimum that we could practice.
Yes.
You know, let's practice.
The other thing, apart from people being taller than normal, which I still don't understand how that happens in Boston, you know, some countries, like Netherlands, is like that. And
Scandinavia.
Montenegro is like that. Remember how tall they were?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Podgorica.
But the other thing is that, and this is like Scandinavia, people walk very closely behind you. And fast. Boy, people walk fast. We're fast walkers, you know? We walk around New York all the time. But this is even faster because I guess they're on the way to class or something.
Yeah.
But they come up right behind you. They're practically touching. And it's just, it becomes a little bit distracting because you really have to dart around and keep your eyes open and all, you know, 360 degrees. So that took some getting used to.
There's other things, too. It's so funny at these little details of behavior. But I think it's part of the way we travel, and it's something everyone, I think, can access, that ability to not really have a purpose and really not be there for any reason other than to really listen.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, we gain a lot of insight. And that's how you learn, like, what a place is like. And we really try to listen for accents, too, but there wasn't a lot.
Didn't hear very much of that typical Boston accent that I'm not going to imitate.
No, I'm not going to either.
But it's out there, I'm sure, but it's not as pronounced as, at least not in the places we were walking around, didn't really hear very much of that. I heard some in the play, but I think they were trying to make a point there.
Yeah, they had emphasis on certain characters being a little bit more thick in the accent arena. But no, it was overall a very pleasant experience. We spent some time in a lot of different parts of town. Cambridge, of course, the place where a lot of the college campuses are. We were in the Italian neighborhood in the North End.
North End, yes.
We went along the water and some of the places, the piers and stuff, where a lot of boats and new development is going up. And, oh, man, it was a whirlwind.
We went to Stony Brook.
Oh, you're right. Wow.
There's a stop on the Orange Line called Stony Brook, and we had to go there.
We did. We couldn't not go there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Orange Line being one of the lines of the subway system, and it was interesting going kind of really far out, not knowing really where you're going, but we were there. We touched it. We got a picture.
If you ever watched the show St. Elsewhere, the opening credits, you see the Orange Line going to the right of the building. That's no longer there because they tore down the elevated part, but it's still outside. It's just kind of below ground a little bit. And I think one or two stops beyond that, that's where Stony Brook is. So there you go.
It was interesting.
Yes. Okay, but, you know, we have other things to talk about. And, of course, this is something that affects us quite a bit. Last May, as you may know, we started following Sevilla when they won the Europa League.
I thought we were going to talk about Rhinos.
No, not yet.
I'll have an update on that. But
well, okay, but we were following them because we started many weeks ago with a 10th division team in the UK and followed the winner of every game up until the winner of the FA Cup, Football Association Cup, in England, and then took a team from that to go to the Europa League Championship the next year, and the winner of the Europa League goes into the Champions League, which is where we are now, and Sevilla had won every round up until last week when the second leg of their game with Leicester in Leicester didn't go so well. And so now we are following Leicester City. Cinderella team, basically, they won the Premier League in England, I think, last year, and it's just a miracle that they've come this far, but they have, and they've beaten our former team, and now we are pledged to follow them to see if they make it to the final. The quarterfinals are taking place April 11th, 12th, 18th, and 19th. It's in two legs, one game away, one game home. And there are eight teams left. Those teams are Atletico Madrid, Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich, Juventus, Leicester City, Monaco, Real Madrid, and Barcelona. Yes, and we are playing April 12th, the first leg, Leicester City. We are playing Atletico Madrid. So that's when we will follow things next, and the second leg of that is April 18th.
Well, I know how you feel about Atletico, and I would like to reiterate that we're with all the cabbies and
It's difficult because, yeah, I
people.
There were two Champions League finals where Atletico Madrid were meeting Real Madrid, and I rooted for Atletico Madrid both times. Once we were in Madrid when it actually happened.
It's true.
And both times Real Madrid came up the winner. And Real Madrid is kind of like the New York Yankees. They kind of like the privileged team that all the rich people like, whereas Atletico Madrid is more like the Mets.
Ronaldo.
Real Madrid is Ronaldo, right?
Yeah. It's the same difference.
No, it's not the same difference. Atletico Madrid is totally different.
No.
My God.
Oh, wait, Barcelona has Messi, right?
Wait, yeah, totally. Yeah, it's a different team. Barcelona is yeah, it's a different conversation.
But the superstars.
All right,
but
Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, yes. So if Atletico Madrid beat Leicester, it won't be too hard for me to follow Atletico Madrid, but we have to root for Leicester. That's in our contract.
So I don't know any players on Leicester, and I don't really know any players on Atletico.
Actually,
can you name one player on Atletico?
No.
Like a one renowned player.
People think I'm a sports fan. I'm following the more the mathematics of this and just watching how it all evolves. But Leicester City, I know the goalkeeper, I think, is the son of another famous player, and you can pick this up just by watching.
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat.
Yeah.
But
here's a different boat.
Yeah.
Tonight, you know what happens tonight? It's more local. United States is in the semifinals of the World Baseball Classic, which happens every 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
And they're playing Japan. Starts at 9 o'clock, 6 o'clock in L.A. And the final is tomorrow. They really get through this fast. Puerto Rico has already qualified for the final. Now, it's interesting. Puerto Rico, aren't they part of the United States? I'm not sure how that works. But I just think it would be really cool if Puerto Rico beat the United States. Wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be.
I'm not quite sure how that would be reported. Yeah, they're in the final. Of course, Japan versus the United States, another interesting game as far as matching up baseball players.
Well, and yes, especially since Japan has really got an incredible baseball following and league in and of itself.
And they've won two of the three previous World Baseball Classics. I think Dominican Republic won the other one. So, yeah, the United States hasn't even won this thing. We keep calling ourselves world champions. We can't do this. And, yeah, you can say, oh, yeah, but our best players aren't playing. Well, then you still lose, okay? If your best players are too greedy to play for whatever it is they're being paid for this, then they don't count. And you wind up not being the world champions because of that reason instead of not being good players. So,
Have we checked on Greenland? Are they going to be invited to the World Cup yet?
So far, that situation is still
fluid. We talked about that?
Well, Greenland does not qualify for FIFA, and they should.
A stadium, right? They're working on a stadium.
Yeah.
We'll update people about that. We're still assembling the campaign.
We're trying to get people together to basically help build a stadium.
Yeah.
If you have stadium building skills, contact us, otw@2600.com. We'll be happy to
put you in touch.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you could help bring one more country into the World Football League.
That's not
the name of them. It's I remember the World Football League when I was growing up. That was an alternative NFL type league. But this is every country has representation.
UEFA, right?
UEFA is European.
No, FIFA.
FIFA is the whole thing.
The federal federation.
And there are more countries in FIFA than in the UN. So that is some, but not Greenland.
Not Greenland. So we got to work on that, people. Is that it for sports? Anything else?
I think that pretty much wraps it up. But just remember, you know, if you're in a bar or something later on, make sure they watch the World Baseball Classic, United States versus Japan. It's going to be exciting.
Woo!
Yeah. Okay, so politics, yes. all kinds of interesting things going on. You know, everyone's talking about it. That's why we're talking about other things, because everybody's talking about it. And we have our own unique spin on things. How about this? Let's go local on a couple of things. First of all, Forbes put out its billionaire list yesterday. And this guy named James Simons is the wealthiest Long Islander. He's the founder of Renaissance Technologies. That name keeps coming up.
Oh, that's the place where that guy in the folding chair was protesting this morning.
Well, you saw that. I didn't. And it wasn't this morning. It was about 45 minutes ago.
Okay, maybe he was selling, like, vegetables on the side of the road. I don't know what he was doing.
Well, this is part of the problem. If you're going to demonstrate about something political, don't be just one guy sitting in a folding chair with a sign he can't read.
Yeah, he couldn't read the sign. He needs, like, a banner and, like, you know, 5 other people to hold it. And
50 other people, at
50
least.
Other people to hold it.
But we don't know what he was demonstrating.
Yeah, so, we don't.
Here's the thing. Renaissance, they're right in East Setauket. Right up the hill on Route 25A, and they have had a couple of people affiliated with the Trump campaign. We were reporting on this last year when Trump actually was visiting close by, visiting Renaissance people.
Having, like, donor dinners and stuff.
It really was disturbing that this source of funding was right here.
They were closing off neighborhood streets and, mm-hmm. You know, all this VIP stuff to swoop the candidate, the president-elect in or whatever, and, you know, raise more money and then get him out of town before anybody notices and all that. And, yeah, right here, right on Long Island.
Well, anyway, this guy, James Simons, is Long Island's wealthiest person, and he's the 49th wealthiest person in the world. You know where Donald Trump ranks? He's like 600.
Yeah.
This guy has 86 billion. No, wait, that's Bill Gates. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's number one.
This guy has $18 billion. Okay, I'm sorry. $18 billion, which is a sizable chunk.
That's enough.
Trump has $3.5 billion. He's nothing. Nothing at all. A little kid compared to these guys. Anyway, but.
No. That's unstable. Like, $3 billion? You're like, you're on shaky ground as a billionaire, you know? Because, you know, one or, you know, two thirds of that is tied up in assets, and then, okay, how much liquid cash do you really have as a three-point-whatever billionaire? Probably not a lot. And then that, I mean, the liability on that billion, you cut that in half, so you could, you know, maybe work with half of it and still have half of that. I mean, you have all this maintenance and, you know, the gold leafing on everything. It's just, it's a lot to pay for.
It
so
is.
That's kind of a shaky billionaire status, the 3-4, I'd say, okay, you know, there's maybe a little more foundation.
He had 4 last year.
Oh, he did?
Well, it's not because he gave up his businesses, because he didn't give up his businesses. He still owns them, so he didn't lose anything from that. It has to do with real estate markets.
Yeah, and depreciation. No. You cannot factor that in, because it's a real factor for these real estate.
I'd be more comfortable having $18 billion. I would be, because having $18 billion, you know that you can lose a billion or two.
And yeah.
It's not a sizable chunk.
Right, or if you misplace it. Or you lend it to somebody.
People do misplace things.
Yeah.
Like ethics.
Yeah.
People misplace those all the time. But anyway, do you know how many billionaires the United States has? Well, we have the most in the world, but how many do you think we have?
100.
That's a good guess. That's a very good guess. I'm impressed. But it's wrong. It's 565. 565 billion. That means we have at least $565 billion out there in the hands of billionaires, but it's a lot more than that, obviously. And we have 25 more billionaires than we did last year. So that means 25 people have joined the billionaire club in the last year. And I just wonder, what's that like, you know? I'm now a billionaire. I mean, do they make fun of you because you're new?
I think it's lonely.
Must be.
It's expensive, yeah, all the friends you have to pay for. And
now, one other question for you. Who do you think is number 2 in the number of billionaires? What country is number 2?
Saudi Arabia.
That's a good guess, too.
But wrong.
Totally wrong. China, 319.
Oh, and I'm sorry, China.
Then you got Germany, 114, and India, 101. You wouldn't think India, but yes, India has a lot of billionaires.
Yes.
So anyway, this guy, the guy we were talking about last year, Robert Mercer, anti-establishment Republican. This guy, James Simons, he's an establishment Democrat. He donated to Hillary Clinton. So they're having battles in the cafeteria at Renaissance about politics and how many billions to give to whom. So, yeah, they're not all evil. They're not all evil. So, yeah, this guy, he's a cool guy. If you look at him, he looks like he has a conscience, right?
No, wait, where?
I think I waved him through at the post office when he was making a left turn.
Okay.
This guy. He looks familiar. But, they're not all Trump people. Some of them are, but not all of them.
You're talking about at Renaissance?
At Renaissance, yes.
Okay.
Yes. The name speaks volumes, you know. There is a renaissance, at renaissance, perhaps. But, regardless, Trump is still the guy in power.
Yeah, he's not really in the majority at that particular organization.
I don't know. We should go over and ask some questions.
Knock on the door and...
have to infiltrate somehow.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, you might be able to just drive up. I don't know, I'm afraid of
okay,
that.
Okay, that's news to me. I didn't realize that. I thought they were all from the Death Star and stuff.
I thought so, too.
Wow.
Until I read a little further. You just got to do a little bit of reading. And, you know, it's not your enemy.
Reading.
Yeah, but people are afraid of all kinds of things. Now, you know who's afraid? This guy.
You know, maybe that's the guy that was on the folding chair with the tiny sign.
You think a guy with $18 billion is sitting on Route 25A at the entrance to his own organization that he started with a picket sign?
Yeah, because they won't let him do it in the cafeteria.
They won't let him do it.
No.
Wow. Okay, he could blow up the cafeteria and they'd let him do that.
Okay, maybe not.
It's possible, you know. He can do whatever he wants.
Well, I just say that because he looked similar to the picture you held up, but maybe it's a bad picture.
What would you do if you had $18 billion?
I can't get into that.
Well, you could go to space. That's a given. You could just go to space and come back. But do that. Just go to space, you know? Go to the moon. Circle the moon. Come back like they're planning.
I'd buy, like, you know, a bunch of government bonds.
Oh, come on. It's so boring.
And maybe get into money markets. And
You know what you could do? You could fix one country. You could pay off debt and give people houses and things like that and just say, look what I did. I made this country, you know, well again, or at least started the process. You could build high-speed rail, you know, in a particular part of the country.
Yeah, but then I wouldn't have the $18 billion.
You could build a whole new Long Island Railroad branch to your house. Actually, that's probably not a good idea. But, you know, you could do something that really would last, and people would say, wow, that was cool.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Look at this broke guy who paid for all
that. Well, the idea is by the time you're finished here on Earth, you're done, and nobody gets anything of yours.
Him and his dirty hands gripping that Dunkin' Donuts cup.
Imagine you could open a Dunkin' Donuts franchise and give everything away. You could do that.
Wow.
Okay, but anyway, let me tell you about this guy, Lee Zeldin.
Yeah,
He's a congressman here in Suffolk County.
Okay.
He's afraid. You know what he's afraid of?
What's he afraid of?
Us. He's afraid of his constituents. Now, you know, the other day...
Oh, did he, like, not show up at a town hall or something?
He's been not having town halls. Him and Peter King. The other day, you may have heard of U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts. We were just in her district.
Yes.
She had a town meeting. She talked to people. She welcomed their questions, their criticisms, their ideas.
She's not scared.
These people are scared. And here's what happened. From the police blotter in Riverhead, Congressman Lee Zeldin reportedly contacted police to say he was worried about protesters showing up at his office last Tuesday night. That's according to a Riverhead police report. He's trying to backtrack and say, nah, it wasn't me. I didn't call in. But he's not showing up. He's not showing up at his own office. And he's expressed a real concern about people protesting. It's part of the democratic way, Lee. You gotta embrace this. You gotta listen to it. You gotta take a few hits for the team.
Face the music.
Yes, exactly. Now, it might be kind of hard to find Lee. He's represents the first district of New York. Now, the first district of New York is basically Suffolk County. It's it's pretty much all Suffolk County from what I can see. Most of central eastern Suffolk County, Smithtown, Brookhaven, Riverhead, Southold, Southampton, East Hampton, and Shelter Island, those are the towns. He has a couple of offices. So let's help you out as far as finding the guy if he's being elusive. First of all, he does show up in Washington, D.C. That's where he works for us. His Washington, D.C. office is located at 1517 Longworth House Office Building. Longworth House Office Building. Now, you might say, oh, yeah, he's inside, you know, a house office building. I can never get in there. Not true. Not true. We went to see Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Well, I just had to go to the bathroom, but
We went all the way down to Washington, D.C. to go to the bathroom.
What? They're not the best bathrooms, but I had to use something.
Look.
It's public, whatever.
We walked. You have to go through a metal detector, you know, usual things you would expect. But once you're in that building, you can go anywhere you want. There's nobody saying, you can't go down this hallway. You can go to your representative's door and knock on it. That's what it's for. So once you go through that first level of security, feel free to hunt down, okay, maybe that wrong word, not hunt down, track down the representative that represents you, because that's really the person you should be talking to, and either make an appointment, talk to, his underling that will listen to you, that's supposed to listen to you, or talk to them directly. But by no means shy away from doing this. You have that right.
And most of the time, they will really take you seriously.
They
because
will.
Making that kind of effort, sadly, is unique.
Hey, Lee called the police, you know. That's how much he is aware of how serious some people are.
But not enough actual citizens go and talk.
No.
Usually it's lobbyists.
You want a phone down there? It's area code 202-225-3826. You want to send a fax? People still send faxes? 202-225-3143. Okay, that's Washington, D.C. But you know what? The East End office, which he's been avoiding, that's at 30 West Main Street. The suite number is 201. And they're saying now that you can only go there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. by appointment only. And he's having town hall meetings via Facebook Live, which is nonsense.
Cop out.
You can show up there anytime you want and voice your opinion. 30 West Main Street, Suite 201, phone number 631-209-4235. You know, I have to say, 631-209-4235, I think that's a cell phone. I think that's a cell phone because
I
know that exchange.
Yeah, you're
pretty
right.
Pretty sure that's a cell phone. So we'll work on getting a landline to that that place so you can actually call someone who's there. His other office, go ahead.
You could text that. Send an SMS to that number if it is a cell
phone. That's a good idea.
Maybe send some emojis
you
about
what,
a particular
folks,
bill.
Try texting 631-209-4235 and give your opinion that way. Maybe it'll go right to him.
Yeah.
But just remember, unlike on TV, there's no way to send a text message that comes from anonymous. Well, you can if you really know what you're doing, but it doesn't work that way. Your number, you can't block a number on an SMS by, the normal rules. His other office is on 31 Oak Street in Patchogue, New York, 31 Oak Street, Suite 20. That's the one supposedly he's at more often. Phone number there, 631-289-1097. And the fax number, 631-289-1268. No fax number in Riverhead. So, yeah, maybe that is a cell phone.
What if you set up a shell company to have a short code, and then you SMS from the short code?
Hey, you can do that, except somebody is going to know who's attached to that short code.
Well, I said shell company.
Well, yeah, then someone's going to, someone like us will figure it out. You know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because all the short codes.
We're doing it right now. Okay, and we have to go, but I would be remiss if I didn't give out the same information for Peter King, because he's been just as slimy as far as avoiding his constituents. He represents Southern Nassau and various other parts, and he can be found in Washington, D.C. at 339 Cannon House Office Building. That's C-A-N-N-O-N, 339 Cannon House Office Building. His phone number, 202-225-7896. Fax number 202-226-2279. And when he's up here on Long Island, his district office is the Massapequa Park district office. What? That's funny to you?
I thought you were going to say something else.
Located at 1003 Park Boulevard in Massapequa Park. His phone number is 516-541-4225. And his fax number, 516-541-6602. Now, so these guys are not showing up when they're supposed to show up. We have more contact info for them if they prove to be even more reluctant to meet with their constituents. You have to hold people accountable, and it doesn't stop with Trump. It's everybody, right? Hey, Frank's here. Hey, Frank.
Hey, how you doing?
Frank, thank you for building the studio.
Hey, no problem.
Yeah, it's pretty plush.
Green light. Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's a green light on the new phone. We have now three phones in here. But,
yeah.
You're on it.
Well, we're not on it. We're on the air.
Wow.
And yes, but we have a new phone system here.
It's not supposed to have a green light.
I don't understand the green light myself.
Just have a blue one. No.
Okay, well, the colors are all off.
I think they're RGB LEDs. I think they can be like one of 16 million colors needs to be.
This is the first step in us taking phone calls on the air. Once we have delay, we can actually take phone calls.
Next week you will.
Oh, boy. So, okay.
It gets put in tomorrow.
Wow. You heard that, folks. I'm learning this as you're learning this. Delay is being installed. We will take your phone calls next
week. On delay.
At this time. You just made me louder. Was I low?
You were too low.
On delay.
Too low. Okay.
That was good. You were low.
I'm sorry to hear that. Well, that's a common complaint.
Can I get an engineer here?
Well, what's the advantage of me being loud?
We'll
the last
turn blue, then it'll be better.
The last minute of the show, I'm loud. That's okay.
Frank wants you to be loud and proud. Okay, this is WUSB Stony Brook.
It certainly is. We are out of time. Finn is coming up next, and we just want to encourage people to remain talking and communicating and listening. And writing to us, otw@2600.com, and we will be back again next week. Have a good night.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath a halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one dare disturb the sound of silence. Fool said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words, like silent raindrops, fell and echoed the wills of silence. People bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, tenement halls, whispers.
That's right, it's 7:01 on WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM. I am Chris Michaels. I'm filling in for Finn tonight. He had to go take a powder and iron his shoelaces. And no, I will not be going on a political rant. I will hold that until 9 o'clock tonight when my usual show is on. But until then, we are going to be honoring Chuck Berry. This is Back in the USA on WUSB Stony Brook.